Hello, welcome to the big show. Yeah, we're here to discuss all the big stories. Then there's a few. It's done better than the Max show, as I have to say. Joining me, great bunch. Atlee's allegedly joining us. But until that time, Mr. Dabs, how the devil are you?
Well, I'm fine, thank you very much.
What's been going on in France land?
Well, absolutely nothing today. Today's the 1st of May, which is Labor Day, which is when the French celebrate not doing any work. So this is the one day of the year where everything is shut. They have shops open on Christmas Day, New Year's Day, but everything is shut on the 1st of May.
Cool. So there you go. No, not that you were going out anywhere.
Well, I go out every day. I find an excuse, you know, I must go and buy one croissant.
Yeah.
I can't just stay in every day.
No, bad luck, mate.
Ran out of cheese.
Next name, Jeffrey. How's life?
Life is well, especially since I'm hanging out with everyone here.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good. I've got nothing to ask you because we asked you all during the Max show. So, you know, we've got the big cat report and the weather report and we ought to separate those really. So we've got something to talk about when we join you each week.
Now that seems reasonable.
Each show.
Yeah. So we didn't talk about weather on the Max show, did we?
Go on. Yeah, you said you had the 1 week of spring.
Oh, yeah.
Last week. Yeah, we did. Yeah.
And
missing the back show in favor of a nail appointment, Patrice.
Yeah, I kind of messed it up. I thought the first was a Saturday, so I said, yeah, sure, 6 o'clock is fine. And then I realized the first was today. I'm like, oh, no.
Bad luck, mate.
I really wanted to join.
Happens to the best of us.
But got many nails.
New nails, so that's all that matters.
Happy.
Did you have to put your fingers to the letterbox or something? Or
yeah, kind of. Like they had like a plexiglass shield and like a little slit and you slid them through them. So it was kind of, yeah.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that. I'd forgotten we were in lockdown. How'd you get your nails done? Yeah. so clearly like nails are essential then, eh?
Well, in Austria, they're like, as of today, they're opening up more things. Like they started 2 weeks ago, like after Easter, with like more shops and like, I think, what was it, home improvement stores and stuff like that. And they just watched and just looked at numbers and looked what was happening. And now they're like opening up more things as of today. That's why this was even possible today. Like today was the first day.
Yeah.
And then like in 2 weeks they're gonna open up I think restaurants and stuff if like everything goes according to plan.
Well, May's your bridging month, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not as bad as Germany. Like Germany's worse. But it's like pretty much the same, yeah.
Yeah, we say it every year, but God knows how you fought a war with all the days off and bank holidays.
Yeah, I still don't know how. Like
it's because the nobody French works in May. Well. That's the thing.
Yeah, nobody works in May. Yeah, well, that's probably why, yeah. Nobody works in May here. Yeah, no, but like, as I said, like, Austria is opening up. Like, there were the first flights are happening. I think borders are still shut until the end of the month. That's it. Like, it's a wait-and-see approach. So they're, like, slowly, like, opening some things up and then just looking at the numbers and seeing, like, what happens. And if that goes well, they're opening up more. So I think hotels are still closed till the end of the month, at least. Things that like that, but there's like you can at least meet up with friends, like as long as you still keep the distance, so no hugs, for example. You can meet up with friends now. That's allowed as of today.
Oh, bravo, that'll do. I'm trying to work out why I look like why I looked like I was in a horror film, and then I remembered I haven't put the light on.
Yes,
I thought that was on purpose.
Now I've put the light on, it's and now I've really screwed it up because I've opened. Oh, I can't be doing with it.
Just turn them off.
It's gone even worse.
Oh, yeah, that's better.
Oh, yeah, there that's better.
Oh, my life. I've never done this before in my life. I just did exposure. Here we go, it's coming back.
Oh, that's funny.
There we go. There we go.
Oh, that's completely blown out. Yeah, it's a little bit better.
Getting better. I'll sort it out. While we do, Alistair's first story, because he's the only one that actually listened and put anything in the doc when I asked him to.
Oh, God. he put in like four stories.
Oh, he does every week, yeah. Hedges his bets. Which one do you fancy to start us off with then, Mr. Dabs?
Well, if I try and explain, most of them are PR. So the NASA story of the week was they've just appointed SpaceX and a few other people to be suppliers for their moon landing. That's PR, so I'm not going to talk about it. Besides, I don't know anything about it.
That's really going to happen, isn't it? It'll have more chance of happening if old what's-his-face gets re-elected.
It's the big equivalent of me deciding which brand of spaghetti to get this week. I mean, it's just at the end of the day, I'll eat it and it'll get me there. But
I don't know. I mean, this is definitely different than how NASA used to operate. I mean, they had the big contracts with
Boeing.
Exactly. All the military manufacturers.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Stanley Kubrick when he was making 2001. This is what it reminded me of, is that when he made the film, he thought, right, I'm going to approach all these big companies who are famous for aerospace and get, say, can I borrow your designers? Could they draw me some stuff? I'll use you for the future. And you know what it's like? You make a film and everyone tries to copy what they've seen in the film, they copied everything from Star Trek. It's just what made me think of that, you know, looking at commercial people rather than asking NASA specifically for their designs.
Well, anyway. I mean, NASA has traditionally worked with a lot of other outside manufacturers and outside labs and all of that. So it's not it's not new for them. I think the difference is that they're not approaching the usual suspects. I mean, even for commercial crew, they're still working with the big guys. I mean, they're kind of working with SpaceX a little bit, but you can tell that this is more they're doing that too. Yeah, okay, let them do it. But they're more banking on their own development, and this is different. That they're saying, hey, we're gonna work with Blue Origin, we're gonna work with SpaceX, we're gonna actually work with the people who have honestly proven that they can do it.
Well, there's a telling line here. It says, last month, Boeing lost to competitor SpaceX in a separate competition for cargo delivery services to the Lunar Space Station, with NASA saying in the memo, Boeing's proposal was the highest price and the lowest rated under the mission sustainability factor. There is a certain element of them thinking that they just had to rock up and they were going to win it.
Yeah, which traditionally was exactly how this worked.
Rolls-Royce got into the same kind of thing. They went through a phase of thinking that they could just make anything and people would buy it. And then people stopped buying it when Bentley came out with the new Continental and stuff like that.
For a long time, there was no competition. There was nobody doing anything. It was basically the big two or three basically making up prices. And it usually worked. But now there is competition, which is, I think, to some extent it's good. There are some downsides. I'm not surprised.
I desperately want us to get back to the moon in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. That would be pretty awesome.
I'd love to see us have someone at least orbit Mars before I died, but that's looking like it might be a little bit more of a forlorn hope.
Yeah. Since we talked about Mars recently, there was a story I did not pick, so it's not my story this time, about... the sample return mission from Mars, how that's going to work and how complex that actually is. They're going to send a rover there that's going to basically collect samples, and then they're going to send something else there that's going to get the samples from the rover and then shoot it up to yet another thing that's going to bring it back to Earth. So a lot of handoffs, a lot of things that can go wrong, a lot of things that have to work together.
Well, they've been doing that as well. Didn't they have that thing that they caught that returned from Mars with samples, and they caught it with a helicopter?
The thing that Japan, I think it's Japan.
Yeah, they brought some samples back from Mars and caught them in a helicopter.
I thought that was just a test.
Was recently, but they did it a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
They might not have bought Mars stuff back, but they bought something back and caught it with a helicopter. And they've been practicing recently with catching stuff from helicopters.
Wasn't that an asteroid or something return, sample return?
Oh, it might have been, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Because I don't think we've gotten anything back from Mars yet.
No.
As far as I'm aware of. Other than data, obviously.
You may be right.
No samples. But as I said, and that whole thing that I just explained is going to, they're going to start it this year with Mars 2020, and I think the sample will be back somewhere in the 2030s. So that's the horizon that they're planning.
They've got to get a move on, man. I'm 70 in that month.
I laugh, but only because we're about the same age. And
time ticks the clock.
I want to see this.
But you're healthy. Tom's asking about whether Callum managed to fix my light. Don't know where Callum is. I thought he might come tonight. But yeah, here you go. Here's my light. It was already fixed. So it's waterproof. So it's not too bad. It's just too damn bright, man.
Just to say, right, my other story is definitely PR. The thing about it's 15 years since the first YouTube video was uploaded. It's a really boring video. It's not even worth looking at. It's God, one of the founders of him standing very still in a zoo for about 8 seconds. It's no biggie. And 15, let's wait for 20 or 25 years to celebrate. In fact, let's wait till we're 70 and see something of the moon. What else was there?
It was, the Sheffield Council one's quite interesting. 9 million road logs.
Yeah, that's the only real story, proper story. And it wasn't even the fact that they hadn't, I mean, you know, they're tracking number plates, obviously, like all councils do, especially Sheffield is quite busy. But they weren't secured. They were completely open, readable.
Not even password protected.
Yeah, and even that's not much of a story because everyone's doing that now. I love their quote. When asked for a quote, they came back and said, it's important to be very clear that to our best of our knowledge, nobody came to any harm or suffered any detrimental effects as a result of this breach. And I was like, you know, to our best of our knowledge, where you just do that and go, la, 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 la.
Yeah.
You know, to the best of my knowledge, I haven't just shot you. You know,
the thing that's quite interesting is that it says that at April 13th, one camera registered 13,000 vehicles, and we're in the thicker lockdown at that point. That is quite a lot of, and normally that would only register 21,000 in a day.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right somehow.
That's a lot of cars.
Yeah, it's further down the story.
Well, yeah, I'm just thinking if it's the same delivery vehicles going back and forth, but it depends which road
one
they're
camera
on.
Camera recorded at least 13,000 number plates on Thursday the 13th of April, having previously captured 21,000 on Monday the 24th of February before the UK entered the lockdown.
It's still rather a lot, but it might be a motorway. Lot. Which one is it?
An awful lot.
It's Sheffield.
Sheffield.
I just love this. Yeah, I'll just say I just love the throwaway, you know.
Yeah, they were interesting because Ellis had a girlfriend who lived in Sheffield for a while, and we took her home one day, and we were in the morning taking her back up. It's 8:30. There's me and 10 other cars on the whole of the motorway. That's it. Nothing else on the M1, and we get up to the junction to get off, and it literally the clock on my phone ticked over to 9 a.m. and all the restricted speed limit signs went off, and it's just like smart motorway, my arse, they're just on a time. It went to 9 o'clock, time to switch the smart motorway off. It's not traffic loaded or anything. It was absolute rubbish, and that was Sheffield. Buggers, absolute buggers.
Also, I was also interested, though it's not really PR, it's bad PR, the other story about the online banks and so on, the challenger banks, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, what's this
having
about?
A slump in well, basically that all those online banks that I don't like but other people say are really good because they're, you know, they're disruptive.
They are good.
Basically saying, you know, people aren't signing up for them. I'm going, well, they can't sign up for them because they haven't got any money. They're all unemployed. And, you know, people like Monzo, I'm sure they have their benefits, the international exchange rate not being one of them. But, you know, it's how fragile these startups can be. And I think it's partly they rely so much on kind of angel investors just to keep piling the money in, and suddenly an awful lot of that has dried up as well. So if people haven't got any money, they're not opening unnecessary bank accounts that cost more than they should.
Yeah.
And the investment money's dried up as well, so they're really stuck. So this is the only thing they can do to get PR is to talk about how bad things are.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure it's about the money like people don't have. I think it's simply there are other priorities right now. I've used online banks for years and they're great. There's N26, which I've used since basically day one. It's a German company and they're great and they actually do something that like nobody else does and they actually try to be disruptive. But it's like when you're dealing with like this pandemic and with like thinking about your job and whatever, you're not thinking about moving bank accounts or anything like that. Like you have other issues, honestly, and it has nothing to do with signing up for extra bank accounts or like having no money to put in them. It's more, well, you're busy. Like you're busy thinking about other stuff and like worrying about the future. So you're not.
So they're sitting in front of Netflix all day. There's just no time to sort out their bank.
It's not about time. It's about not being a priority at that point. Like as I said, like you're too mentally at least busy dealing with everything else and like taking care of your kids and all of that to like.
Well, it's a theory. I think it is money. I think people. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are not that many people I know who are constantly solvent every day through the month. Mm-hmm. Now an awful lot of people are suddenly racking up debts and asking for mortgage holidays and so on. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely an impossible time to change banks if you're thinking of switching banks. On the other hand, if I was looking to open a bank for whatever reason, it would surely be easier to do it as someone like Monzo at the moment than try and find a local Barclays.
Yep.
So in that sense, you think they would be doing quite well. But they're not. They're doing much, much worse. And I think people are going, you know, no one will touch it, you know. I shall transfer my overdraft to another bank. You know,
it's a stability thing as well, isn't it? I suppose whether your money's safe or not.
Yeah, I said. I wouldn't call N26 a startup at this point. Like they've been around for so long; they're in so many countries now. Any startup is at risk. Like something like this might happen. They usually don't have much runway. They don't have like the systems in place. They also don't get the government backing, like the big banks. Like if something happens to them, they lose whatever, 5 trillion in a day. Usually governments step in and help out, and they won't do that for the small guys. They're like, well, they're going to die. So what? So that's definitely a difference, but it's not different than any other startup. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure other startups are struggling right now as well, because like who's buying, I don't know, the latest and greatest smart home tech
your classic disruptive tech startup is having a really bad time. So your classic disruption is to have something that doesn't actually make any money and has no business plan. You just find someone with lots of money who's very stupid to keep giving you loads of cash so that you as the boss and the inventor can give yourself a six-figure salary.
That's not the definition of disruption.
That is an absolute bang-on definition of what disruption is.
That's not the official definition of disruption.
It's embossed in gold. No, absolutely. That's what disruption is.
No, not really.
Because the boring way to do it is to make money and serve people. And
Jeff,
and
it feels like mom and dad
disruption.
On the other hand,
is just to bullshit people.
No, on the other hand, there is a chance for disruption right now because so much is changing, and some bigger companies aren't, or like even governments are not willing to do it. So there is absolutely a chance for disruption right now. Basically, whoever adapts to the changed environments first might have like an opportunity there. So it is more difficult. I mean, it's in any crisis. Like there were like quite successful companies that came out of the financial crisis, and were those companies that, like at that point when like everybody was hunkering down and not doing anything, and they saw the chances and they saw the opportunities and did something with it. So there is every crisis, every change in consumer behavior, every change in like culture is also a big chance for disruption and true disruption, not like what you said, like the the let's make like let's get investors to invest like $1 billion and then like get six figure salaries and sell the company in 3 years. The real true disruption or something
is really move it changes. Offshore, avoid tax.
Yeah, not that. Like something that's really changes.
Disrupting the tax payment system, that is.
That's one kind of disruption. There are many others. Like, I mean, the iPhone it was a disruptive technology or was a disruptive device.
The but iPhone screen a, was.
You're, yeah.
I mean, I'm going to say it was the whole iPhone.
Yeah.
Because it was a package deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. As unpopular as this may sound, Amazon, very disruptive company.
Yep.
I mean, not in a good way, but they found a way to make it easy and convenient for people to purchase things that they normally had to go into a store to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and no one else had been able to do that in the way they did.
Yeah, they disrupted the like traditional retail business. So there are many examples like that.
Yeah. Sheffield City Council are disruptive with their vehicle tracking data.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. new data sharing.
No one else thought of security in the sense of actually just leaving it open to everyone. So they disrupted that model.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the way they've set it up, you can't breach their data. Because it's just simply doesn't need there for everyone.
Sat in the park having a suntan.
Now that's disruptive right there.
That's forward thinking. Have you suffered any data breach? No, we left it out on the porch.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think some hackers should sue and just say, you know,
this was too easy.
You handed all this to me and I didn't want it. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do all these number plates?
I listened to How I Built This, like an NPR podcast. Today, actually, about Fitbit and about their whole like data breach, and they were literally like, "Well, we didn't like we thought it was fine that like all this data was public. We didn't think about it."
Yeah, but it's just imagine you got hackers sat there and go, "What have you got? If you're through, yeah, I'm in. What have you got? I got 9 million heartbeats."
No, the heartbeats were actually public. It was like,
Jeff, tell us about Moxie. Is that your story?
No, it's not, but I can read the story real quick and tell you about it if you want.
Patrice, tell us about Moxie.
So the whole idea of like feeling robots or robots that are emotional to some extent, it's kind of creepy to me. And I saw this story, and it's a robot, like it's a robot for kids, like for kids who are developing like social skills and emotions, and it somehow helps them. But when I saw this thing, I was like, I didn't even care about the story. Like, it's like just kind of like what Alistair said, PR.
Yeah.
But like, tell me that I'm not wrong. Like, I think this is creepy. Like giving like a robot that can like show and interpret emotions to a kid, like to children.
It's a really great way to teach children to behave in the way that that a specific group of people wants. Okay, and I'm not saying that in a good way.
Yeah, okay.
Isn't it just a big Tamagotchi? It doesn't shit as much.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like that. It's like the Tamagotchis, it's like the Furbies. Like, I mean, it's the same or a very similar idea. It's just like the 2020 version of this. You can actually buy them. So it's not like a thing of the future, like in a couple of years, they're available for pre-order now. I'm just thinking like, I mean, isn't that something parents should be there for? Like teaching kids emotions?
I think you're missing some here, mate, because...
it's a doll.
Yeah. And if you look at the way that kids use dolls, if you'll find often that like kids will have a tea party with their dolls or whatever, and the kid will chastise the doll, or the kid will shape the behavior of the doll in the imagined game in line with what the parents taught. So I think this is actually taking what the parents are teaching the kid And the kid is then passing that on and reinforcing it with the Moxie doll, and the Moxie doll is giving feedback about that as to success or failure. And that, I think that is a parenting job. That is parenting happening, because you can see that the parenting's happening by the way that the kid plays out with the doll.
So in that sense, this is a gauge to the parent's success.
Yeah, I think this is quite the opposite, in fact, of disconnected parenting. I think it will show that parenting is engaged, because otherwise the kid will not know how to interact with the doll at all. And the other thing I thought about as well when I read the story was the, you know, if you've got any kids with Asperger's and stuff like that, where they struggle with how to recognize emotion in others, then playing that out with the doll and seeing the doll's... what's the word I'm looking for? When you kind of go overboard on something, it's over-exaggerated kind of response may actually help them to understand emotion more in other people.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Like, especially for kids with Asperger's or anybody on the spectrum, that might actually be helpful.
Is there an age range there?
I can't see one in the story,
I mean,
the kid that's with it is probably 10.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say bad things about it, but it looks a little fragile. And when we were talking about playing with toys and dolls and stuff, I mean, I used to take my Action Man and I used to hang them and throw them out the window and see how many arms he'd still have when he landed. I don't fancy Roxy's chances.
The thing I will say, though, is it looks like it's meant to be carried around maybe and placed. It's not. It doesn't look like it's
perambulates. Yeah, children do that, don't they?
they carry dolls. The dolls don't walk themselves, so I can't see much of a difference. But I think the thing that I saw was, if you look at the number of expressions on the faces in the pictures that are just available on that story, it does look an incredibly versatile display.
Yeah, and these arms move as well, don't they?
So. Yeah, they've captured a little bit of the Eve body shape from Wall-E. And then the face is very much like Big Hero 6. So I think they've done really well on that. There's a relatable thing within the character there.
Don't know. He looks vaguely Islamic. I have to get him to take the head covering off.
Mox's mentor, his idea is that the robot will also improve the child's cognitive, emotional, and social skills by teaching the robot. So it is that role play of reinforcement of
Tamagotchi
rules and that kind of stuff from parenting.
All right, so taking this to a different level, I could see, especially now that we've all been able to experience isolation through quarantine, taking a product like this and turning it into a surrogate companion for people who, you know, like me, for example. I'm living in isolation because I live alone. And so there are times of profound loneliness and having someone to interact with, or in this case, this device that's there that can mimic human interaction, I could see where something like that could be really useful. It's great having the video thing where in real time you're interacting with friends and family, but having something that's physically in your presence to interact with, I could see some value in that. So I'm now wondering if they're thinking about, can they take this idea to that level, or if they're looking at it only as a developmental tool for children.
I've just posted you an interactive companion in the chat room, mate. Just for your isolation, it'll work absolutely perfectly.
There we go.
See, you hadn't thought
by
of that.
Now.
By now. £8.29, the Wilson Castaway Volleyball.
That's perfect. That's exactly
see,
what I need.
You just hadn't thought of it.
No, I hadn't. And see, this is why I need disruptors like you in my life.
I don't want to diss it. It just looks very fragile. Just a large Tamagotchi in a burqa.
I would be interested to see what the resilience of that thing is, whether that's just a prototype that they've used for the photo shoots for a mock-up, or whether it's a working example. And I'd love to see how the kid carries it around, because it doesn't look like it's probably quite heavy in the base. And it may be very slippy to carry, unless that fin that he's got on top of his head actually is a carrying handle. And then you've got different issues if you're teaching someone to carry someone around by the hair.
Yeah. Well, if this has a battery in it, like it
must be,
then it's definitely going to weigh more. Of course, the way they have set up the photos, you can't really tell if there's a power cord coming out of it anywhere.
There can't not be. I mean, that display looks quite hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, I've looked at a lot of these devices for people at the other end of their lives. So people in homes who are kind of on their own and, you know, for comfort and all sorts of, and someone, I can't remember the name of it. It was an Israeli company, but this thing looked like do you remember the old iMac that had the light stand?
Yeah, the Luxo lamp style iMac.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically the best iMac.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's just fantastic.
It's the best looking Mac they ever made.
But it was a bit like that, but it would move just like in the Pixar animation. So it would look at you and have expressions, and it didn't just sit there. It actually kind of moved around. And I always thought, you know, that was great, but no one was able to show me an actual unit. Every time you asked, they said, oh, yeah, and they'd send you another video. And just the video was just too pristine, too nice to be true.
Didn't they do a stop motion animation of that moving around and stuff when it was first released?
I don't know. Could be. I mean, it'd be ideal, wouldn't it? I can't remember. It must have done.
The Sunflower iMac. Beautiful.
It was so much fun. It was great.
It was the I was actually talking today to someone about how much I love that Mac. It was my favourite Mac to use. It wasn't particularly powerful, and it wasn't actually that great a computer, but it was. I just loved the aesthetic of it.
Yeah,
I loved walking in, switching it on. I loved the fact that you could turn the screen to show someone something, and it didn't. You could do like 10 turns of the screen, and it never lost connectivity. It never wound tight. It was beautiful. Just such a simple form design.
Came with speakers.
It was gorgeous.
That was the
one I've got at the office still works. It's got a leopard on it.
Nice.
Yeah. Just fine. Well, all the Macs that I've got still work. That's the interesting thing. They all fire on. They might not actually do very much, but they all go on and they all start the OS, and you can all log into them and you can start, I think, two of them. There's more than that. It's probably about four of them haven't got internet browsers on. They're that old.
Yeah. Got an old colleague who first worked with him in the late 80s, and he contacted me just a couple of years ago. Says, oh, my old Mac's starting to kind of play up a bit. I said, what is it? And he was still on his SE30.
Jesus.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Okay, so he had a Radius monitor attached to it, but
I mean, I've still
black and white 20-inch monitor, and it must have cost about £3,000 at the time.
I've got a prototype Mac SE down at the studio. It's got no serial number on it or anything, because it was one of five that was sent over to Stockley Park, and it still works, still fires up, no problem at all.
That's very cool.
Need to get a drive fitted to it though, but I haven't got the tools. I need the long torque tools to get into it to get them out, and I can't get them open. So if anyone has got a set of long torque tools for a Mac SE and can lend them to me so I can fit the new drive, I've got a brand new Apple drive there waiting to go.
Just borrow Callum's
tools. You must know. Yeah.
Callum hasn't got any tools for it.
We've had that okay.
Wow.
Because they're all the screws are recessed in tubes.
Right.
So you need long, thin torque screws to get into them. And I haven't got them. But if I get that the drive sorted, then I've got a box full of discs that one of the listeners, Mark Sisson, gave me. He's an ex-Apple tech in Canada. And he sent me a huge box, probably the size of my laptop, full of 3.5-inch floppies.
Get to play Beyond Dark Castle again.
Oof. Yeah.
Oh, good times.
System 6, System 7 operating systems. I really, really, really want System 3, though, to fire on the SE, because that was the original. It shipped with System 3.3. So. If anyone's got it, if anyone can help me out, please get in touch. BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. I'll be eternally grateful, and I'll buy you a beer. Jeff, tell us about your story, mate.
All right. So my story is about Automatic Labs, not Automatic WordPress. Automatic Labs, they make one of those little car data collection devices that just plugs right into your car. And I've been using their products for years to, so that I know what an actual error is when the check engine light comes on, because it'll tell you, and then to log mileage. And it's been a great tool for me. Well, they announced today, totally out of the blue, company shutting down completely on the 28th of this month. Just done, over. That's it. And they're saying that the problem that they're having is that now that everyone is staying at home, that they just don't have business now, because people aren't driving like they were. Which, on one hand, okay, I can see where that could be. But I think that they were already in a very precarious position, because last fall they told everyone that had their products that you have to buy a brand new version, and they were shutting off support for everything except this brand new version. And I think that there are a lot of people that decided that they just really weren't interested in upgrading and signing up for this brand new subscription service.
Yeah.
And they didn't do it.
Is this in the kind of mold of the Sonos thing, where actually if you're providing something that people perceive as a simple service, even if it isn't, there is a desire that, well, okay, look, I don't want to go on with the upgrade process. So if all you're doing is tracking my mileage, I don't feel like that app should ever stop being able to track my mileage.
Right. And if you had anything other than this brand new version, then you couldn't even do that. So it was a very disappointing move for a lot of people when the company did this. And I know quite a few people that had been using the automatic sensors since they first came out. So they'd gone through the version one, they bought the version two, and version one continued to work with version two. In this case, maybe what they could have done is said, okay, we're dropping support for version one, because that one was really old at that point in technology terms, and then support version two while bringing out this new one. And but that's not what they did. It was like, we're starting over as if we're a brand new company with a brand new product and a brand new subscription service. And I think it was too much all at once. Mm-hmm. And I think they lost a ton of customers. And then with so few people driving now, in comparison to what we had at this time last year, it was enough that they just didn't have enough money coming in to keep the company going. So they're shutting the whole thing down.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you have one of the automatic sensors, their instructions are, take it out of your car and recycle it.
Yes, I've had that with an awful lot of fitness wearables.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a box of fitness wearables in my closet that that all have services that stopped, and it made the product useless.
Yeah. And you get the email that says, you know, we recommend, you know, here's what you should do, you know, unstrap it, put it in the box, take it to a recycle center. I know it's so specific, you know.
So I guess the next time I go out to my car, I'll pull the automatic out from under the dash and recycle it.
Skim it over the water like a pebble into a recycling bin.
Yes.
It does say that there's a rebate site available, so you can go and get your money, some of your money back maybe, but you've got to submit a request in before June 15th. Are you going to be doing
that? It's a shame, isn't it?
Right. And I'm pretty sure that I've had mine long enough that there's no rebate for me.
Yeah, and then there's a whole trust.
Never mind.
Like, are you gonna buy a new device, not knowing how long they're gonna support it at this point? Like, since they've already proven that they can do this.
Yeah,
right.
Google does it often enough.
So now I suppose I need to decide: do I want to have a device in my car that allows me to look at what errors are, track mileage and actual usage, and if so, what do I want?
Or do you want to sell your car?
There you go. And I'm thinking that when I pull the automatic out of my car, I'm probably not going to replace it with anything.
Mm.
Yeah. No, I use a mile tracking thing, and actually I'd be lost with it at the end of the year, because it's one of those things I forget to do, and then it comes up time to report me mileage, and I'm like, oh shit, I haven't skimmed all these to business or personal, so I have to go through them all, and I've got 200 journeys to get through, so.
Yeah, and that was one of the great things about the automatic. If you needed it for business, then, it was just there.
Mm.
All the data just downloaded for you, and you could make a nice report and have it for taxes.
Absolute shame.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, Tom's just put in that he thinks it's not dissimilar from the issue with Sonos support a few weeks ago, just being
I think Tom is right, and this really backfired for automatic.
Sonos just handled it much worse.
I don't know, because there is a need for perception of customers to understand that there is a cycle, there is a lifetime to things. You can't go on doing the same shit forever, because the OS changes, the reliance on 32-bit versus 64-bit can come along, and technology can evolve, and you can't expect people to sit and rewrite drivers or rewrite software endlessly just to perform simple functions. But equally, if you've got something that does a simple function, it should still be able to do that function, because the simple function is simple code, surely. There's an equality there between the two.
I think automatic's business in this case has dropped off so dramatically it just wasn't any point in trying to carry on. And this is even with SiriusXM owning the company, because SiriusXM bought automatic several years ago.
And they're in good shape from according to the report.
Right. And they could very easily. Apparently my iPhone thinks that I was
serious. Yeah.
My iPhone
is disrupting said, you.
Hey, S lady sex, and was offering me up online resources for learning about sex.
Excellent.
Thank you. Yeah,
good.
Wish that would happen here.
Yeah. So, if SiriusXM wasn't willing to infuse a little more money into the company, then my guess is that it was dead.
Yeah, no. The writing was on the wall, so to speak.
Yes.
Excellent. I haven't got a story because I didn't think I was going to have to do one, because it was going to be enough for you. Callum would probably show what we want, so. Oops. Good job you did a couple, Alistair. This podcast and all the others is supported by UK2. They're brilliant. They look after us. If you go there at the moment, getting a website with WordPress hosting involved as well, you'll get 33% off. They've got deals at £12 per year, not per month, per year, for simple few page sites, simple as that. Really, really good. And it doesn't get, I think the top price is only £60 or something if you want an online shop and all that kind of stuff with it. Support in building your website, and they're just great, and the customer services are the key part. We've got quite a few BTN listeners who use them, and Batwench put a story out the other week on social saying just how good the support was from the customer service team at TSO Host. Please check them out. They are absolutely superb, and make sure you get out on the socials and shout out to thank at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. We couldn't be doing this without them. We've got two massive servers that pick up all the bandwidth, that have got all the stories of all the shows going back to 2008. You've got to get in there and support, and please do that. And also please support Carl Swagger. He's been doing the news show. We rely on your donations to pay him $250 a month to do the news show. It's a pittance compared to the amount of time that he has to put to get the show up to speed and working. So please get yourself on there. If you look at the shows, you'll see at the bottom there's a little donations tab. You can be a bronze, silver or gold member and just submit a donation of $5, $10 or $20 to the network each month. Renewable through PayPal. Cancel it any time you like. But please give us a couple of quid here and there, because that keeps the new show on the air and it keeps us doing the stuff that we need to do. It pays for the caricatures for the website and that kind of thing. Just the infrastructure keeps us going. And we need to get your caricature done, Alistair. You've been on the network enough now.
I've probably got one somewhere. I'll send it in.
No. It's got to be done by Lemper Ultimate. It's got to be our style. Otherwise, it's not going to get used. Yeah, no, we're a bit picky about that. And also, please check out, I've just deleted their webpage ridiculously from the, and now it's not loading. Here we go. Yes, it is. Please support IMN Max as well. If you've got anything with an Apple logo on it and it's playing up, get these boys to have a look at it. Just have a chat with them. Free advice from Callum. If you're a BTN listener, he'll give you a bit of guidance and support if you've got a few quiz questions that just need helping through. But if it needs recovery, then we can do that too. So get it shipped up to Birmingham, get it into the boys, and they will pull it to pieces, tell you what's wrong with it, give you a repair. All the repairs are warranted for 6 months, and all of the machines that they sell as refurbished machines carry at least a six-month warranty. Some of them a year warranty. They've got a few iMacs at the moment that they're still getting rid of. So if you want one, then go and give them a shout. Not horrific prices, and all warranted up to a year, like I say. So remember to say that you came through BTN and you will get a 5% discount on the price as well. As thanks to them for supporting us. Right, time to do the cool thing. Would you like to start us off, Monsieur Dabbs?
Oh yeah, I'm afraid like last week nothing cool happened, so I just got a whole series of crap things, which I whittled down to two. So my first of two crap things of the week is this one, which I think I've just pasted in twice, which was taking advantage of everything, of how people think about how unwell we all are and sickness and staying out of hospital, is someone trying to flog DNA tests over the internet.
Jesus.
So for five, that works out at about £500, I think.
Oh my God. So
exactly $499. Or in Hong Kong dollars, as it appears on my screen, because I'm in a different zone. And it's, okay, it's a DNA test. I mean, it's kind of cute, and it's all this kind of stuff. But all the promotional stuff is about, it tells you what you should be eating. It tells you what you should be doing for your life. It tells you when you're going to die, you know. And you think, oh, I'm going to get one of these things. Terrible.
Oh, dear.
I shall not be buying one of those soon. But
and don't forget, if you do have it, all your data is then available to your insurers so that they can cancel your insurance policy.
Yeah, and if you live in Sheffield, who knows who will be dealing with that
number,
data.
You get a free number plate, AMPR DNA test.
I think this is unfair to call it crap. It's kind of rather tempting. Is this daft thing of the week that popped up in one of my social media feeds as an advert.
Oh my God.
Ad. And it's it's a plastic telephone kiosk that you can put in your own house. Now this is if you go to that particular page, there's a little demonstration video saying, you know, they're trying to sell it. I mean, they make bigger ones, you know, so pods where people can sit and have private conversations like MI5 and what have you. This kind of individual telephone kiosk pod is being sold as a solution to home working during the lockdown. And this,
wow,
like shortly into the video, they demonstrate they've actually shut the children inside this cell while the woman's sitting on the bed doing work. And it's just,
oh, it works the opposite way around.
Got you. Here we go.
Yeah, got you.
There you go. Oh, I've got the little bastards out of there last. I hope they suffocate.
There's nothing good about this on any level.
It's disruptive, mate.
That's true. It's disruptive. You're right.
get your framery cell, child cell now.
Have we got any idea on price?
Is it an April Fool's joke?
To lock children away like that must be priceless.
I mean, there's a link you can click on where you can, it's almost like IKEA or something, you can build your own. So I have a feeling they might make them a bit like, Everest windows. They might make to order, which might actually make it a bit expensive.
So they don't actually give you a price. You've just got to say how many frameries you want.
And then they'll come back to you.
They do them for 2 to 6 persons as well, so that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger ones, I kind of go, I can. You know, if ever you've had to work in one of those open plan places with a pod, and there's some loud twat who's shouting, really loudly, and you just can't get any work done. This would be ideal for that kind of thing. But the idea of actually having one in your own bedroom to shut the kids in and forget about for a few days was, maybe I could just pour some milk in through one of the holes or something. Yeah.
Good pick, mate. Like that.
Right.
I do like that one, actually. Jeffrey, what have you got for us, mate?
I have instructions for building your own tensegrity sculpture. So the tensegrity sculpture thing took off on Twitter and Instagram a couple weeks ago. And it's so people, of course, immediately started building them out of Lego. And so the idea is you set the two pieces up and then it looks like this amazing optical illusion where you have part of the sculpture hanging in the air, but it's just physics doing what physics does. And so I found that Brickworks has instructions for making your own. So now everyone that has enough Lego sitting around has instructions on building their own tensegrity sculpture. I've been digging through my bins of Lego, trying to find the two longer chains, because using the Lego chains will make this much easier to build. You could do it just with string, but you need to make sure that everything's the right length. Otherwise, it won't be stable. But there you go. If you want to make your own tensegrity sculpture out of Lego, you have instructions.
That's incredible.
They're very, very cool.
Tell me about it. That's just unbelievable. I don't get how it stays up.
See, that's part of
how it doesn't swing inwards. Yeah.
I mean, you've glossed over that, Jeff, with physics does what physics does.
Yes, I totally did.
So I'm guessing you don't understand either.
I understand on a very basic level, but if I try and explain it, then I will explain it wrong and expose what an idiot I actually am.
Yeah.
But from what, okay, so in very simple terms, from what I understand, it's all about the force going through that center chain. Mm-hmm. And then the back chains keep it from flipping. So the back chains just simply stabilize, and it's the front chain that's the key to this whole thing working.
It says it doesn't take much to destabilize it. It can fall over, but...
Oh, sure. Of course it can.
Yeah, I mean, if you apply force to it, obviously that's going to change.
Yeah, but you'll see people take like Lego minifigures and set them on top.
Yeah.
And it can hold a little bit of weight on it, but still, even the fact that it can't hold a ton of weight, and if you go and like flick it with your finger, it's going to fall over. The fact that you can do this and it works is very cool. So if you really wanted to, you could make something like this with string and glue and popsicle sticks. Or I guess for you, iced lolly sticks.
Yeah, that's fine. No, we got that. I find it incredible. But so these are all standard parts that you get with kits.
Yes.
It does look quite specific. Has no one thought about buying or making a kit that does this?
You can actually buy one right off Brickworks.
Right. Okay. Cool.
But
kind of thing you'd find in Mankind, isn't it?
The kit that or this specific build. They did it so it looks really nice. If you have enough pieces, and specifically the chains, since that's the part that's hardest to get the right lengths. And you don't have to build it to look this pretty.
Mm. Yeah, they use a lot of parts to make it look
good. And I'm sure that that after I find my chains, the long chains in my bins of Lego.
What are the chains from? Like a Captain Jack Sparrow boat or something like that?
The chains, yeah, like the pirate kits, the haunted.
It's not house the Madam Whiplash set, is it?
The Madam Whiplash Hellraiser set.
I
just got to see this thing stand up once again.
Yeah.
Now don't put it down.
Yeah, basically the chain in the middle stabilizes it. That's where the most of the force is, and the other ones are just keeping it from turning.
Oh, the little Lego COVID at the top there.
All right, so if you put him further back on the thing, it's going to collapse because it's tilting the opposite way. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, love that. Love that a lot. Might be separating from a few quid by the end of the show. It's not been a good day for me because I've had a microphone and an audio card at the Mac show, and now I'm going to do this. Damn you all.
Yeah.
Patrice, what have you got for us, mate?
I talked about IT Revolution books last week, and I wanted to pick one of their books today. Unfortunately, when you guys hear this, like not live, the book is not going to be a dollar right now. It is a dollar, and it works globally. It actually works on Amazon. I put the promotions FAQ also in there. It actually works on Amazon, iBooks, some like Barnes and Noble, and some others as well, like Google and so on. So like you don't have to buy it through Amazon. But the cool thing about this book, the book is called DevOps for the Modern Enterprise. And I think this, for me, is one of the books that, like, if you work in any kind of IT-related enterprise environment, like, no matter what it is, like, if your main thing, like Mike Rose, for example, who works for I think Salesforce, like, or anybody, like, works for a bank. Banks are usually very IT-heavy these days. This is a very essential book in my book, because it lays out a lot of very important principles and things that people that are not usually in the IT world or not as understanding, especially in the management side, probably won't understand and are very important to understand to run like an effective and like good, also like good for innovation, good for your people, IT and DevOps like company. So and I said it's a dollar today. They have promos running until the 12th of May. So if you listen to this right now and it's before the 12th of May, then go to IT Ref Books on Twitter or go to their website. You might have to dig a little bit. They've hidden it well. Like on Twitter, it's very easy. There's a tweet that says this book is a dollar or even 10. Like they had one of their very recent books that was $10 instead of 20. The ebook version, obviously, only. But like they will tell you, and they're really good books. Like in my top 10, there are at least 3 or 4 of their books, and the others that they have are usually in the top 20. So it's my absolute favorite book publisher in this area, like IT, DevOps, Teams, like all this like management and like IT related fields. I'm pretty sure, like, if you're not in an IT company, there are books in there that you might still find helpful because a lot of the issues that IT companies face are not unique to IT. Are like if any bigger company or any company like that has probably more like 5-10 people will probably run into very similar issues at some point. So they're really good books, and I can highly recommend it. And said, right now they're giving away most of them. Like I bought a couple for like a dollar. Like plus tax, it was like $1.07 or something. Like the Kindle version. So I'm going to read them all. And I've already read quite a few of them.
Excellent.
Good tip.
Oh, bugger. I get something up and then it just disappears. Just talk amongst yourselves, eh? My cool thing is dead simple. It's Squash, available on Setapp. It is an image converter and shrinker, so compressor. Take a JPEG, shove it in, and it'll squeeze the life out of it. Take a PNG in, convert it to a JPEG, and it'll squeeze the life out of that, as well as you can batch process your images so that you can take away percentages of image size or image file size, and it does a brilliant job. If I want to send a set of social media images, so I'll shoot for a company and I'll send them the full size images that are, you know, wallpaper making level images, and then I'll just send those images through Squash, make them into a little set of bite-sized images and say, here's your social media images, just to go straight out on the net. And they're really light and easy, you know, a few kilobytes, and they've got stuff on. Available in Setapp, free, Squash. It's brilliant.
No.
I use it loads. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Dabs?
Oh, right. Okay. Where can you get hold of me? On Twitter, Ali Dabs.
Excellent, mate. And weathering the shutdown in France for at least another week.
Yeah. As I say, the story I didn't give you was the French Parliament talking about this app. I mean, they're actually talking about the app in Parliament, and they're saying, can we have a vote on it to see how secure it is? And the government's saying, no, you're not allowed to vote on it until we've developed it. After we've developed it, then we can debate it. And you go, okay, well,
fair enough.
Strange way around to do it, but there you go. Maybe they need to read a book about DevOps, I think.
Yeah. I need this pod for my wife. She talks too loud. It might end divorce, though, says Tom.
Okay.
Let us know how you get with that. Write a review for BTN, Tom. Jeffrey, where would you be?
I am over at textexpander.com, and on Twitter and Instagram, I am Jay Gamut. And just to let everyone know, Tuesday, May 5th, excuse me, have an advanced Text Expander webinar. So head over to textexpander.com/webinar, sign up, and let me teach you some new things.
Yeah, if you want Text Expander, then go buy it and use the offer code BTN2020 and get 20% off the service. And you get a personalized trainer with that with Jeff. He will do a solo for you, mate, if you're a BTN listener. And last but by no means least, Patrice, where would you be?
Well, I am usually every week here on the Mac Show and the Big Show, just not today, but usually I'm here. Everything I do on thepatrice.com. And I think also this week I should mention my podcast again, which is Foodie Flashback, foodieflashback.com. I just released, after like three really stellar episodes, I released with you and with Jeff and with Doc. I released one that, like, with someone you probably don't know and haven't heard on a podcast, even though I've podcasted with him a couple of times. That's Jerome, like another of my friends, like my best friend from Hawaii, actually, and also Doc's friend. And on Monday, or like probably Sunday night, coming up is yours truly, Tom F. in the chat room or the Slack room, Tom Ferry, who's not a podcaster, never been on a podcast, doesn't even like food, or is not a foodie, at least that's what he said. So you can look forward to a really cool and interesting one on Monday. It was really good. Like, I really enjoyed it, and it's different. So I really like that. So, and we have a recipe. So it's like, for someone who doesn't, like, isn't a foodie and is very practical about food, like, we talked a lot about food. So yeah, look forward to that. Foodieflashback.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. My name is Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech, and you can follow my Instagram feed on at 12 Space Media. We'll be back again next week with the same usual suspects, talking about all the news that hasn't happened over the course of the next few days because of the coronavirus thing, and we'll still be in lockdown, but we'll be having fun. Come and join us. You'll enjoy it next Friday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.